Good morning, everyone. It's great to see you here this morning. What a wonderful day to be together. Beautiful outside and just sun shining, and it just brings joy to my heart when I see that. Michael, thank you for your reminder this morning. You know, sometimes we forget where we are, and we our minds are just not in the right spot. So thanks for waking us up a little bit and reminding us of good news, that we need to be joyful about that. We can smile and be encouraged, and so thank you. Well, we want to welcome all our guests. If you're visiting with us this morning, we're glad you're here this morning. As Ken mentioned this morning, please stick around afterward. We'd love to say hi and get to know you a little bit better. We're just glad that you're here with us today. Well, my story this morning is a fun one, I think, as we continue in our series on the Sermon on the Mount. You know, famous celebrities are just like everybody else. You know, we see them in the limelight and we think, oh, they're different. They're a different kind of person. But they're like everyone. They're like us. They are erratic. They make fools of themselves in public. And they even start fights sometimes. And the main difference is this: when a celebrity does these things, there's usually a reporter around to record their actions and make it national news. That's the difference between us and celebrities. We don't have cameras following us around, and they do. Well, surely everyone is familiar with the famous fitness guru, Richard Simmons. He is known for his eccentric and flamboyant and energetic personality. He's promoted different weight loss programs over the years, most prominently through his 1980s best-selling aerobic videos, the Sweatin' to the Oldies. How many of you remember those? Sweatin' to the Oldies. Well, it was March of 2004, and Richard Simmons was waiting in a Phoenix Sky Harbor International Airport. He was waiting for a flight. He was going to go to Los Angeles. Well, that's when another waiting passenger recognized him and saw him and got excited. Christopher Farney is the gentleman's name. He is 6'2", 250 pounds, and he was an ultimate cage fighter and martial arts expert. Well, he saw Richard Simmons and pointed him out to the rest of the passengers and very loudly yelled, "Hey everybody, it's Richard Simmons. Let's drop our bags and rock to the 50s. Well, Richard Simmons did not appreciate that attention, nor that sarcasm. And I imagine he was a little bit perturbed that he got the title of his famous exercise videos wrong. It isn't rock to the 50s, it's sweating to the oldies. Well, in response, Richard Simmons approached Farney, this 6'2", 250-pound cage fighter, and said, "It's not nice to make fun of people with issues." And then he proceeded to smack him across the face. Although this did not hurt the cage fighter, Farney did call the cops. Well, the charges were later dropped, but Richard Simmons insisted that Farney deserved to be slapped. Well, Simmons took this embarrassing situation into his own hands, literally. But what should our response be when someone else does this kind of thing to us? To assault someone physically back? Maybe to call the cops? What about those of us who might be on the receiving end of this? Should we retaliate? You know, that's the question today that we're going to consider as we continue in our series from Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. And it's the last of our series in Living Righteously, the one that I'm calling Living Righteously. And actually this morning, our lesson is titled, "Ouch, My Cheek," because we're going to hear what our response should be when we are slapped across the face. So in our passage today, Jesus addresses this idea of an eye for an eye. We heard that in our scripture reading this morning from Leviticus, and what that entails with the people hearing this message that day. So let's read our passage together. If you'll turn over to Matthew chapter 5, we're going to read verses 38 through 42 this morning together. So let's turn over there. And it'll be up on the screen as well. Matthew chapter 5, verse 38. And here's what Jesus says. He says, "You've heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil. But if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you." In this passage, we read the fifth of the six antithesis passages. We've talked about this over the last few weeks. Jesus speaks in these six passages a phrase of antithesis where he says, "You have heard that it was said," and then he says, "But I tell you." And so last week we spoke about being a person who simply says yes or no and who keeps their word. And that's the kind of person we should be. This is part of our reputation, our integrity. Our words and our actions, they go together, don't they? When we say something and whether or not we're going to follow through and do it. We read similarly in Proverbs chapter 6, verses 16 through 19. It's a clear weaving together of the evils we speak and the evils that we do. Proverbs 6, verse 16 says, "There are six things that the Lord hates, seven that are an abomination to him: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that make haste to run to evil, a false witness who breathes out lies, and one who sows discord among brothers." Words and actions can rarely be separated. Both are in front of God's vision. He sees it all. We spoke about our words last week and what we say and whether or not we're going to keep that. How important are those words? We talked about that. In this passage this morning, Jesus moves on to address the importance of our actions. And this issue of retaliation is Jesus' primary concern here as he puts forth five principles before us to guide us in what we do as the people of God. I want to go through these five principles that I've found in our passage of Matthew 5 this morning. The first one is this: do not retaliate against evil with violence. You know, verse 38 is a direct and a partial quote from a few Old Testament texts. Exodus 21, verses 23 through 25. "But if there is harm, then you shall pay life for a life, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe." And then over in Leviticus 24, verses 17 through 21 says, "Whoever takes a human life shall surely be put to death. Whoever takes an animal's life shall make it good, life for life. If anyone injures his neighbor as he has done, it shall be done to him. Fracture for fracture, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, whatever injury he has given a person shall be given to him. Whoever kills an animal shall make it good, and whoever kills a person shall be put to death." And then finally in Deuteronomy 19:21, "Your eye shall not pity. It shall be life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot." These passages speak to what Jesus is trying to teach them and says, "You have heard this was said." And then he's going to change that and say, "But I tell you." These texts in particular are concerning this principle of lex talionis. This is Latin for the law of retaliation, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. This is familiar to most of us. We've heard this phrase before. It was originally given as a guide for the courts and their judicial system, and their judgments were never intended to guide individual people in their everyday living. You know, how to exact revenge in your life when something bad happens to you. It was meant for the courts so that they knew how to handle these things. It was intended to help guide them into a good judgment and justice in the courts without any kind of outside influence, so that people weren't trying to tell them what they should and shouldn't do. But it got out of hand. People did start to exact this very kind of justice on their own without any legal grounds. It became rough justice in the streets, and it created this bitterness and hatred and vengeance in the people. And so Jesus' response is to lay down another principle for the people in this. So he says, "But I say, do not resist the one who is evil." That's in verse 39. In other words, Jesus says, don't retaliate to others and treat them as an enemy. Don't immediately make someone attacking you an enemy. Instead, see them as a neighbor. See them as someone you would love. Be loving to them, not hateful. Be kind. Don't be harsh. Don't look for revenge. Don't look for retaliation. Look to be their friend. In Romans chapter 12, verses 17 through 21, we read Paul says, "Repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God, for it is written, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay,' says the Lord. To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink, for by doing so, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." The mindset that says that if we're harmed in any way, we should get even, that's foreign to Jesus. And he's not wanting them to think that way anymore. It must also be foreign to us as disciples of Jesus. We're called to walk away if someone hurts us. And so that actually leads to the next principle that we're looking at here, these five principles of retaliation. And that's, if someone slaps you, turn the other cheek. These are examples of what you should do if you're insulted or attacked. First, if someone slaps you, if anyone slaps on your right cheek, and that would be a backhanded slap from the backhand intended to embarrass the person. It was an insult. And what Jesus is saying is to turn the other cheek to them also, to be willing to endure another insult. Say, if you're going to insult me, go ahead and do it again. Interestingly, the word that Matthew uses in his gospel for slap is the same word that he uses in chapter 26, verses 67 and 68. When Jesus was blindfolded before his crucifixion, and he was hit by different people, slapped by the Roman soldiers. It's the same word. This slap would both be insulting and painful. And so what we see in Jesus, in his example, is that he lived out these things that he's teaching in the Sermon on the Mount. He was mocked, he was spit upon, beaten with rods, slapped, whipped and scourged, and nailed to a cross. And he endured it all without any revenge, but actually he had forgiveness on his heart and on his lips. And that's how we're called to live this out. This verse isn't calling us to refrain from any self-protection or defend ourselves and our families from harm. That's not what this passage is saying. This passage isn't saying that we should seek justice for those who commit, or that we should not seek justice for those who commit crimes. We do believe in justice. We do believe in defense. But Jesus' principle here is to show our enemies love and to be a neighbor of compassion, putting aside hatred and revenge for love. We're supposed to forgive our enemies and pray for them. That's what we're called to do. Number three, when someone demands something of you, when people demand something of you, be gracious. Jesus addresses how a disciple should respond to a legal attack. In our passage of Matthew 5, he goes on and he uses another example. This would have been also very familiar to this first century Jewish audience. He says, "And if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well." This tunic that the plaintiff is suing for was a long inner garment that was worn under the coat next to the skin. It was usually made of a wool material or a linen, and it was often used in bartering and making payments in Jesus' day. This cloak that Jesus then says to give the one suing was the outer garment. It was considered even more valuable. It was not just used as a coat. They would actually use this as bedding. If they were out sleeping outdoors or in an unfamiliar place, they could use that coat as bedding for their sleep at night. And so what Jesus is saying here is, if someone wants to sue you for that inner garment, which is worth what you usually would pay for something, well, give him the cloak that you would use for your bedding also. Give him everything. In Exodus chapter 22, verses 25 through 27, we read, "If you lend money to any of my people with you who is poor, you shall not be like a moneylender to him, and you shall not exact interest from him. If ever you take your neighbor's cloak in pledge, you shall return it to him before the sun goes down." They would need that to sleep. "For that is his only covering, and it is his cloak for his body. In what else shall he sleep? And if he cries to me, I will hear, for I am compassionate." What this passage here is saying is that the law would say not to impose this kind of thing on the poor. But Jesus, again, he goes above and beyond the law and says to give everyone more than what they ask for. Wouldn't it be a shock, someone accusing you and bringing this lawsuit, if you were to give them more money than they asked for? We don't see that today, do we? Not a generous giver when you're being sued. Usually that is imposed on the person. Well, Jesus is telling the audience, he's saying, give them even more grace and love than they might deserve. And why is that? Why does he say that? Well, that's what grace is. It's unmerited favor. You don't deserve or earn grace. You don't do something to receive grace. You give grace because that's what the word means. Grace is more than what you deserve. And so that brings us to our fourth principle. Be willing to go the extra mile. This has been a colloquial saying in our culture for a long time. And the source of it is here in this passage of Matthew 5 this morning. There's actually a historical background behind it that I want us to understand. So if you think about Israel, they are an occupied territory under the rule of Rome. These people could be legally compelled to do anything, especially to assist the Roman military if called to do so. It's like when our nation was fighting in the Revolutionary War and our people were commanded to quarter soldiers of the British Army if they stumbled upon your property. An example of this in Scripture is when Simon of Cyrene was forced to help carry Jesus' cross on his way to his crucifixion in Mark chapter 15, verse 21. The Jews, no doubt, hated this practice because it humiliated them. It shows that they were subjects of Rome and were not free people. And this was often abused. The phrase, 1 mile, here in this passage, especially verse 41 here, it means 1,000 paces in Latin. According to Jesus' illustration, you would be legally required to help Roman soldiers by carrying a load that he gives you for 1,000 steps. But when you reach that limit, Jesus says, don't say, okay, that was 1,000 steps, so I'm done, and throw it on the ground. Jesus says, no, keep going. Go an additional 1,000 steps and do it voluntarily. Do it joyfully. Not for your own favors that you might want later, but do it for him. Do it for Jesus. This Roman soldier might even be shocked that you would be willing to go for so long because he is your enemy and you helped him. That would shock him. He might wonder what's going on. Well, our fifth principle, be ready to help those in need. In Jesus' last illustration, he describes someone you encounter in your day who has a legitimate need. This person isn't slacking or lazy or being irresponsible. They are hurting, and they are in need of your help. And you have that ability to help. And so Jesus says, help those who beg of you. We are called to help the poor. Many Jews would rather just die than to actually have to panhandle. They didn't want to do that. So when Jesus says, give to the one who begs from you, and don't refuse them who would borrow from you. He's referring to those with legitimate needs, people who don't want to beg, but they have to. They're at that point in their life. You are their last hope. And he's saying, don't lecture them about getting a job, but feed him. Share with him what God has blessed you with, and don't expect to be repaid. Our motive is in helping other people is a quite simple thing. We have been helped and blessed by our Father in heaven. Our need was bigger than the beggar's. We needed his forgiveness and his mercy and his grace, and he freely gave it to us. As Paul writes in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 9, he says, "For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you, by his poverty, might become rich." We have an opportunity to share the gospel, both with what we have physically and with what we have been given ourselves, with God's forgiveness. This is truly amazing grace. In 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 22 and 23, we read that he committed no sin, neither was deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. What an example! Jesus not only bore the wrath of God in our place, but also the wrath of men for you and for me. He bore that burden on himself. How well have you done that in your life? How well are you living this out, this passage here in the Sermon on the Mount? Have you ever been angry by insults and given them right back? Have you ever gotten into a physical fight in your life? I don't know, maybe as a young man. Have you yelled at someone for wronging you and treating you badly out in this world? Have you ever wished ill upon someone who's done something wrong to you or to someone that you love? Have you been cheated and looked down on and you were seeking revenge of some kind, restitution? You really wanted that. I know this is something that our kids are wrestling with, something that they're dealing with. And they're watching. They're looking around to see how are the adults in these situations going to act? How are they going to respond to these situations? It seems like violence is on the rise, especially in our schools. I think that in many ways, I believe that it is in some way, the example that they've been given for so long in their lives. We say it's justice. We say that we're looking for restitution. But oftentimes it's not. Many times it's revenge. It's taking the law into our own hands. But we must set an example for their sake, so they can be the example in their worlds too. When they're in school and they see kids fighting, that's something we've prayed about. Our kids that have seen fights in school, and they didn't know what to do with that. What if the kids that fight at school saw that these other young men and women were seeking to end those fights with love and kindness? I think it would change some people's perspective about how to live. I remember seeing a video of a fight between two teenagers in the street in 2017. This was a video I came across on YouTube at one point. I'm not going to show the video, but I'm going to show some pictures, nothing graphic. Don't worry. But these two teenagers were in a fight, these two young men. And you could see him walking up, this man coming along behind them. And he says, "You're in the street. Why are you fighting? What caused you to do this?" These two young men try to explain their situation and why the other person was wrong and how this was the rough justice that needed to happen. And this man in the black sweatshirt back here, he says, "You've been ill-advised." And he starts to point. Look at him pointing there. He says, "Look at your friends. Look at these people who say that they're your friends. They aren't trying to calm this down." He says, "Look, they're laughing at you. They all got their phones out. They're recording you. They're egging you on. Is that what you need?" He said, "We have enough violence." Over what? It was over a girl, of course, right? That's what young men fight over. Over what? He says, "You can't talk this through. You can't shake hands. Look at them." The kids kept laughing, and he kept pointing it out. "Look at them, they're laughing at you. He can't stop smiling. He can't stop laughing. Think about where your parents are. Where do they come from?" Well, finally, this man, he says, "I'm not leaving until you shake hands." We should be able to shake hands and disagree and walk away. Well, these three, both the two young men and this other young man, they ended up on the Steve Harvey show. He was the hero of the week for Steve Harvey's show. Well, he asked him, he says, "Why did you do this? Why did you do this?" This man's name was Ibn Ali Miller, and he said he wants people to know the love of God first, because a man without God is no man at all. And second, to have reverence for your parents, regardless of any shortcomings that they have. You know, these young men grew up without a man in their household to teach them and train them on how to live. So they were trying to do the best they could to be the man of their house. The young man on the left was 15 years old at the time. The man on the right was 18. And they were trying to represent their family. And he's trying to teach them, Mr. Miller in the middle says, he's trying to teach them how to be a man of God. He says, if you can love yourself, or if you can't love yourself, then you can't love other people. If you cannot forgive, if you don't have that deep love for yourself, for your future, and for God. You know, some of us have a hard time with this because we've been wronged and we haven't seen justice yet. Well, know this, justice will come when Jesus returns. Until then, show mercy, show grace. As we learned early on in our series on the Sermon on the Mount in the Beatitudes, Jesus says, "Blessed are you when you're merciful. Blessed are the peacemakers." This is the way we should be living. That slap may hurt. We may cry out, "Ouch, my cheek." But return with mercy. Return with grace and love. That's what we're called to do. And that's what Jesus wants from us. Well, this morning, if you have a need, it may be that maybe you struggle with some of this. Wanting that justice. We call it justice. Sometimes it's just revenge. Sometimes we want that. If you need help with that, we want to pray with you this morning. If there's any other need you have, we want to pray with you. I'll be down here. I believe Ken will be down here. If you want to pray with us, share any need that you have, we're going to stand, we're going to sing this song. So let's stand and sing, and if you have a need, come now.